Hello, and welcome to the Learning Mate podcast, where we speak to subject matter experts in the fields of education, education technology, and workforce development to learn more about advances and issues in the industry from cradle to career. As always, I'm your host, Keith Chandler, and in this episode, we are discussing career-focused learning and creating a skilled workforce. And in the guest room is Doris Savron, Vice Provost of Colleges, Assessment, and Curriculum at the University of Phoenix. Doris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Keith. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So Doris has over 23 years of experience in higher education in a variety of settings, including campus and online. She oversees the strategy for University of Phoenix Colleges, program and curriculum design, institutional assessment, and faculty performance and coaching. This also includes oversight over strategy of degree, certificate, and course offerings, designing of curriculum, and student learning outcomes for the university. Doris has also been sought out as a mentor and an international speaker on a variety of topics, including leadership effectiveness, strategy, team development, performance management, and change management. And in 2020, Doris was recognized for her professional achievements, mentoring impact, and her community work as one of Greater Phoenix Chamber of Commerce Athena Award finalists. Wow, Doris, congratulations.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So Doris, as a leader and a mentor in the higher education space, I have to ask, what is your motivation for making education your career and for paying it forward the way that you do to so many people who are just as passionate about education?
So I probably have two primary drivers. One is just, I'll start with my family history. So my parents were not born in the US and they both came over separately. And the motivators for them to come is just for better opportunity and to just set up their future families for success. And I saw the sacrifices they had to make because they did not get to finish their high school education when they made that transition. And they had preached all the time, hey, you want to take advantage of all the benefits and opportunities that are available to you. Education is one of the primary ones. And you need to take advantage of that because we don't want you to struggle the way we've had to struggle. We want you to have those opportunities. And so that always stuck with me. And as I started to learn and get into the high school years and then got to go to college, the process of learning by itself was so bucket filling for me that I thought it just opens up this whole new world view and what learning can do for you and the perspectives that you get and the decisions you can make from it. And I watched then education change my life by the opportunities I was provided to get different jobs and then what that did for me financially. So that's like the primary driver of why education, because you could do leadership in a lot of different spaces, but then education and pouring in and mentoring and helping others is there were so many people along the way because my parents didn't understand the educational system, didn't understand what it took to go to college, didn't really know any of that. There were a lot of people along my journey that helped pour into me to inform, to help me learn, to like remove obstacles and shorten that life cycle of trying to figure it out that I thought, man, this would be so helpful for me to then give back because of all the people that have poured into me. So that's why I focus on mentoring in general, because I saw the challenges and then I saw what wins could come from other people just willing to invest their time in what they know when I had those questions.
That's amazing. And I should also mention that you and I are also have a mentor mentee relationship. We were recently paired up through a mentorship program. And so first of all, thank you for your mentorship and for using your inspiration to pay it forward to me and helping me in my mentorship journey.
Well, what I also love that I didn't share in the first response about mentoring is also I learn just as much from those interactions because there's new perspectives, the questions that get asked. So I always enjoy learning and getting insights from the people that I'm mentoring because they're just in a different place and they're experiencing a place I've been at, but in a different climate. And so there's learning opportunity in just those conversations. So I appreciate our relationship because I do get a lot of good insights just in our dialogue and the conversations that we've had.
Thank you so much, Doris. I appreciate that. You've been traveling a lot and you've been speaking a lot and you speak on a wide variety of topics, one of those being change management. Change is happening a lot in the higher education space. So since you're certified in change management, can you tell our listeners about, you know, why this skill is important now and how we work through managing changes in the higher education space and why that's important right now?
Yeah. So first I would say change management is part of life. You can't avoid it. Things change. I mean, just watch the seasons, right? The time of year, there's an evolution of growth and then reforming and adapting to environment and then getting stronger as a result of that. So it's just part of life. But then the other piece, the reason I invested in just really understanding more of it is the speed of change that's happening in our world because of technology upgrades and evolution. I mean, even AI today is going to change how we do our jobs here soon. As a matter of fact, in some industries, it already has. But the speed of change and then in higher ed, the disruptions that are happening in higher ed as a need for us to address what employers are asking for, as a need to address what skills are becoming prevalent. It's just a necessary understanding and skill to be able to actually be successful in a leadership role in our environment. So it's important for us to understand why change management is important, understand what causes challenges when we have to change, what are the human natural responses of resistance and how to overcome those. Those are all part of a change management skill.
And so University of Phoenix actually has a long history of doing this level of change management. You've been very career focused in your learning process way back to 2019, before the pandemic, before the AI disruptors. And so you've taken this a step further by aligning skills with course learning outcomes. So let's talk a little bit about the origins of that focus and what specific challenges were you hoping to address with that approach?
So we've always been skills focused in our curriculum. We've always mapped to skills that are necessary for a specific credential. The difference was, after listening to our students and then watching what was happening in the market, was they weren't always clear on what those skills were at a course level. So they knew if they were going to, you know, complete a certain credential like an MBA or, you know, a bachelor's in management, they knew what overall that was preparing them to do. But when they had to articulate that in a language of skills, when they were speaking to employers or when they were looking for that next position, they had a hard time taking and consolidating what they actually, how they actually demonstrated that skill when they were starting to talk about specific course level outcomes and achievements. And so what we did is we moved into this mapping programs all the way down to course level skill outcomes versus program skill outcomes to make them more transparent to students. So it was a response to like giving students information about what are they learning in that course? How is that skill important? What do they need to learn to do with it and why that's going to be relevant when they're completing their credential? And then we actually designed assessments around those. So then they were actually able to show something for it through that assessment. And so that transparency allowed them to actually be able to articulate the things that they were getting out of their program and down to the specific course every 5 or 6 weeks, depending on which program they were in, which armed them and empowered them to be able to tell their story or narrative of what they can do. And then watching employers actually start to say, more and more employers were starting to say, hey, we need to shift our focus to skills and not just a credential. So how can we fill some of these hard to fill jobs? And then the pandemic came, it became harder. And then post pandemic, we're still starting to see some of those challenges. Employers saying, hey, we need to think differently about how we recruit and how we find talent. And so that transparency would also then allow us to have conversations about here are the validated things that people that come out of our programs have been able to do.
That's awesome. Instead of just saying, oh, well, here's a degree, here's a course that I completed, here is X, Y, and Z that I have as a result of that degree or that course.
Yeah. And students have actually what we generally call their profile, or it's a like a dashboard process where they can see the skills that they're collecting along the way as a result of courses that they're completing and the assessments they complete related to those skills.
An amazing tool to use actually when you're going out and in the work and trying to find jobs in the workforce as well.
Right. Picking a bachelor's program, it could be a 4-year process. So they're not going to always be able to quickly go back to year one. And so this gives them some tools and empowers them to be able to have the conversation.
Excellent. So 2024 is obviously a little bit different than 2019 because we have been through now these AI changes, as we've mentioned, the COVID pandemic when this journey all began. So, I mean, what skills are you seeing in demand now for the 2024 economy or beyond?
So we are still seeing the durable skills as we've monitored them from year to year. We really have seen they've stayed pretty consistent. Like communication continues to be a durable skill that shows up, that is in high demand. How you communicate maybe in that skill changes, right? We're in a virtual work environment, a lot of us. So how we communicate and how we use our technology tools actually shifts. And so you have to keep the context of that skill. So that's what we're starting to see happen with AI. AI, creative thinking, problem solving, data analytics, those are all still durable skills people have had to have for years. But the way AI enhances our ability to do those things, now we have to prepare people to be able to do that in that context, right? So I still think that data analytics and being able to use data for problem solving is what we're seeing. Collaboration, teamwork has just been on that list for forever. And we hear often how difficult it is to find people that can work well in teams. And now you throw the virtual environment on top of it. That's a whole nother new level of collaboration of how do you do that in a space where you're not in the same room. So that continues to be a skill up there. Anything IT related is still a prevalent skill. Communication, problem solving, curiosity seems to be popping up quite a bit now. And I think that's because it's related to some of those other skills we've talked about. Like when you're constantly curious about learning, it supports better decision making because you're trying to consistently ask questions to learn more about the context of the situation. So I think that one is starting to pop up. But the ones that I've mentioned, I've seen be the same skills even today, monitoring it for years backwards. Like, so it's just the context that changes. And then you have to be able to understand the context to prepare people better for that skill.
That's it. I mean, curiosity makes me a little bit curious, not to, you know, try to be too too awkward or on the nose. But anyway, so like, say, for example, you've identified a new skill like curiosity or something like that. So what are the first steps in deciding to move forward to begin either redesigning some sort of, you know, like program or course or certificate, either from scratch or, you know, how do you incorporate this into an actual, you know, program?
Yeah. So we do have actually a system of cycle of improvement that is a consistent process we use to look at our program metrics or our credential metrics, whether it's a cert all the way through doctorate. And we'll review, skills are part of that review, but so are, how's the program performing? What are students saying? What are the other outcomes data we're looking at? How are the learning outcomes performing? And that gives us information then to decide, okay, there's been a big change in these outcomes. We're going to have to review and reversion the program. But we also look at course outcomes regularly with the data that we have to say, oh, this course seems to be challenging in week three for a lot of the students. So let's dig in and find out what we're hearing from students and faculty and then adapt that course. So we have these cycles of evolution that we use, and that really drives when we make changes based on the information and data that we look at. Deans have programmatic, like some of our programs have programmatic accreditors, and we'll look at their data and what standards are changing. We'll look at, you know, the typical industry data, like CAS data, that, you know, what are the skills that are showing up in job openings at the moment? We have other groups and voices, our faculty, that will give us insights because they work in some of the spaces that they teach. So it's a input of a series of information that collectively together we'll look at to say, okay, what changes do we need to make as a result of that?
A very thorough 360 degree approach. Something that University of Phoenix has done uniquely is use employer language. Can you use an example of how this works in practice, and how does this help learners communicate their skills more effectively to potential employers?
Yeah, so our faculty who teach the courses are working in those specific areas that they're teaching. And so that brings an employer lens in just through the lens that they bring. So what they're sharing, how they're communicating, how they're giving feedback. So there's a component of that that shows up because they're sharing real-time tools of things that have worked for them. They're sharing stories about things that have become challenges. When they give feedback, they're connecting the dots of the feedback on the project to things that would be relevant in the workplace. But the skills mapping that we've done at the course level has allowed us to then put context behind that. Like, here are the skills we chose for this course. Here's what you're going to learn to do. Here's why you need to learn to do it. All of that points in the direction of how they're going to use that particular skill, which puts context around why they need to pay attention to it and why they're in the program to begin with, and how that reinforces their choices of why they decided to pick that particular credential. So it's all in the narrative, how we write up the activities, how we tell them the skill that they're learning. And then the faculty feedback loop is all a part of that.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit more about the student experience when it comes to this. So how does the course curriculum inform students about the specific skills that they are developing? We talked a little bit more about the platform that you have earlier. Yeah. And then how are these skills aligned with the industry needs?
Yeah, so so at the highest level, to answer your second question first, our programs are mapped to all the skills that they're going to be covered in that program. We have the program learning outcomes that are aligned to skills. And then you look at, so for example, in an MBA program, we know that leadership is a core part, a core skill that they're going to have to learn. But to lead, you have to manage change. You have to build teams. You have to manage conflict. You have to be able to communicate. So all of those skills are then organized in different courses to roll up into that program learning outcome. So students will be able to see in each of those courses what the skills are through their course materials and the learning management system. They'll be able to see what skills are being covered, and then they'll be able to see the assignments that are being used to assess those skills, and then all the activities that support that learning for them to be able to do those assessments. So that is very transparent in their courses through the course materials we offer. So as they get through a course and they have an assessment outcome completed, it'll feed into their profile that they set up, that gets set up at the beginning when they start with us. And then that profile allows them to bring, like, actually document skills that they already come in with. So they self-attest those skills, that this is what the skills I think I have. And then as they move through each course and each assessment, it'll feed the skills that they've acquired or demonstrated with us. And then we have started to get into badging as well, which generally is a collection of skills. And then they get a separate credential for that as well.
Very nice. So, I mean, I have two lifelong learning questions for you as we begin to wrap up. So in thinking back on your journey of creating the content that has resulted now in over 500,000 badges, what did you learn along the way? Or was there anything that surprised you in the process?
Yeah, I'm not sure I would say that I was surprised by anything we learned. I think it was more affirmed by some of the learning. One is that there's a lot of momentum towards micro-credentials and badging certain level of demonstration of skill. But we also hear that because there's so much of a trend for that, how do we make sure they're valuable? What we offer is valuable and people understand why they're valuable. So really making sure the data behind what a student is earning and how they earned it is really critical to make that transparent. So when they earn a badge from us, it shows what the skills were that were identified in that badge and then what they had to do to actually earn it. So that's very transparent. But we also learned that not all students understand the value of them or how to share or what to do with it once they get it. So we've been able to, through that learning, then help develop some resources of, hey, this is an opportunity of where you can, you know, share these or showcase these or communicate about these. So not everyone is as familiar with LinkedIn or some of the social media places that they can share. And so we've made that part of the learning process of, like, how do you continually career and build your brand? And how do you continue to tell that story to make sure that when there is an opportunity that arises that all of that information is available for sharing, which empowers the learner to be able to do that.
Wonderful. Doris, I have one more question for you. So for our audience of lifelong learners, I know this might be a challenging question for you because you are a big reader. So is there a book, a podcast, a film, a blog post, video clip, anything out there that you would recommend as a takeaway to learn more about something that you're passionate about today?
Yeah, so I'm not gonna be pushed to pick one because that's nearly impossible to pick, because I am constantly reading and learning, and that's just the curiosity skill in me that I've had since I was a child. I would say that right now, for those in leadership, I would recommend you focus on any material or podcast that really focus around authentic leadership or around building trust. We are at an all-time low. I saw data, I think, come out early last summer that said there's an all-time low of trust in our society. So if there's an all-time low of trust, that means that as leaders, we have to work harder to overcome the perspective that people are already coming in a distrusting state, whether it's your team you're managing, whether it's the peer groups you're working with, whether it's even the customer or the student we're serving, that you have to anticipate that. So how do I make sure that then I focus on my interactions, my communication, and what I do to build that trust back, right? Because I'm already at a disadvantage if society's percentage of trust is dropping. So, and part of what builds trust is the relational impacts and the intention that we build in forming relationships and being authentic. Like, you get to see my true self, I get to see your true self. But it starts with us as leaders. So there are two good books that I've read, which are Stephen Covey. There's The Speed of Trust. And then there's the most recent version of that, that I'm reading with my team now, where it talks about post-pandemic and knowing that our work environments are changing. What do we have to pay attention to continue to build trust? So I would say those are probably the two books I would recommend. I would say anything on authentic leadership, though. And gosh, I have so many podcasts that are so good, but I would say my favorites right now are Patrick Lencioni, The Table Group, or Working Genius, because it really does get to more about like the leader and the role of the leader to build effective teams and what you can do to build those relationships to get, you know, to create an environment where people can be their best and be their authentic selves, which also allows them to bring their whole self to work.
That's awesome. I've been turned on to the Working Genius podcast myself as a recommendation from you. So thank you so much for that. I want to close with a quote here real quick. It says, every moment that we have with somebody is an opportunity to acknowledge impact, appreciate contributions, and thank people for the value they add to the team. And Doris, that is a quote from you. But I thought it was very fitting way to close the podcast today. And I also just wanted to, again, thank you for your mentorship and your leadership. I greatly appreciate it, especially now as the higher education environment is evolving. Your leadership and expertise has been amazing.
Well, thank you so much for that feedback. And I really appreciate our conversations. And thank you for the time you're spending to invest in what you're learning, because I also benefit from some of the questions you ask and what you're sharing in your insights. So I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Doris. Doris Savron, Vice Provost of Colleges Assessment and Curriculum at the University of Phoenix. We're going to put the links to your suggested resources into our podcast episode, and you can find more information about that on learningmate.com/podcast. Doris, once again, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Once again, those recommendations from Doris Savron, Speed of Trust by Stephen Covey, and the podcasts At the Table and Working Genius, both hosted by Patrick Lencioni. You can find links to those resources on our website. That is learningmate.com/podcast. There you will find our library of episodes, links to all of the references we mention in our episodes, and also a questionnaire. If you want to be a guest and speak to me about why you are passionate about education, please fill out that form and we will start the discussion. The Learning Mate podcast is a production of Learning Mate Solutions Incorporated. I am your host, Keith Chandler, and until next time, thank you for listening.